Every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Good day to you, listeners. Today we have an episode about sleep. Hopefully, it doesn't put you to sleep. I needed to take a break from the murder episodes because I could feel my brain melting inside of my skull from all of the horrible things that I have inserted into it recently. Anyways, I am Autumn, and this is Seven Circles, and here is...
Hi. I be Dan.
A lot of weird things can happen while we sleep. Today, we are going to talk about a few of them. First, we are going to talk about sleep paralysis, and there will be a lot of words for me to struggle with during this episode, so enjoy.
That's literally my favorite thing in the world until we're on about attempt 20, and I just want to kill myself, or you, or both.
Suicide and murder are not funny jokes. So, according to WebMD, sleep researchers conclude that, in most cases, sleep paralysis is simply a sign that your body is not transitioning smoothly through the stages of sleep. Sleep paralysis is rarely linked to underlying psychiatric problems. Sleep paralysis usually occurs at one of two times. If it occurs while you're falling asleep, it's called hypnagogic or predormital sleep paralysis. If it happens as you are waking up, it's called hypnopompic or post-dormital sleep paralysis. What happens with hypnagogic sleep paralysis? As you fall asleep, your body slowly relaxes. Usually, you become less aware, so you do not notice the change. However, if you remain or become aware while falling asleep, you may notice that you cannot move or speak.
You lucid dreamed too soon, stupid.
Yeah, dummy. What happens with hypnopompic sleep paralysis? During sleep, your body alternates between REM, that's rapid eye movement, and NREM, that's non-rapid eye movement sleep. One cycle of REM and NREM sleep lasts about 90 minutes. NREM sleep occurs first and takes up to 75% of your overall sleep time. During NREM sleep, your body relaxes and restores itself. At the end of NREM, your body shifts to REM. Your eyes move quickly and dreams occur, but the rest of your body remains very relaxed. Your muscles are turned off during REM sleep. If you become aware or awake before the REM cycle has finished, you may notice that you cannot move or speak.
But don't worry, it's not the end of the world as we know it. So there are actually four stages of sleep, stages 1 to 3 being different flavors of NREM, followed by REM.
Up to as many as 4 out of every 10 people may experience sleep paralysis. This common condition is often first noticed in the teen years, but men and women of any age can experience it. Sleep paralysis may run in families. Other factors that may be linked to sleep paralysis include lack of sleep schedule that changes, mental conditions such as stress or bipolar disorder, sleeping on your back, other sleep problems such as narcolepsy or nighttime leg cramps, use of certain medications such as those for ADHD, and substance abuse.
Narcolepsy? I'm not sure if I fell asleep while working and whacked my face off the desk, I'd be terribly paralyzed.
Several types of hallucinations have been linked to sleep paralysis, such as the belief that there is an intruder in the room, the presence of an incubus, and or the sensation of floating.
These seem very specific, and I'd personally rather have a succubus than a rapey male demon, given a choice. Are you suggesting that these are hallucinations common among multiple people, or just three random one-off events, two of which are essentially the same?
Yes. All the people, a lot of people, many, many, many humans have experienced this. Those things.
Thank you for clarifying. I was unsure.
You're welcome. People who have sleep paralysis attempt to breathe deeply and find themselves unable to do so, creating a sensation of resistance, which the body's threat-activated vigilance system interprets as an unearthly being sitting on their chest, threatening suffocation. The sensation of entrapment causes a feedback loop when the fear of suffocation increases as a result of continued helplessness, causing the subjects to struggle to end the sleep paralysis episode. This phenomenon occurs globally, and many cultures have many names and theories of what is occurring. We will name a few here.
I don't typically find myself unable to breathe, really, just move. I usually try to move my legs until I wake.
How does that work out for you?
Well, usually about after 30 seconds of trying, I just wind up thrashing around in bed and waking up.
Good to know.
You're usually there.
Am I, though?
When she gets home, there's none left for me.
Anyways, in Egypt, sleep paralysis is conceptualized as a terrifying djinn attack. The djinn may even kill its victim.
That would not be one of my three wishes.
Sleep paralysis among Cambodians is known as the ghost who pushes you down and entails the belief in dangerous visitations from deceased relatives.
Even nice deceased relatives? What do Cambodians think happens to you when you die? Pervy Uncle Pete the pedo sneaking into your room, I understand. But what about lovely old Auntie Agnes? Why is she gonna fuck with you while you sleep?
She probably isn't, Daniel. In the different regions of Italy, there are many examples of supernatural beings associated with sleep paralysis. In the regions of March and Abruzzo, it is referred to as a pandafetchi attack. The pandafetchi usually refers to an evil witch, sometimes a ghost-like spirit or a terrifying cat-like creature, that mounts the chest of the victim and tries to harm them. The only way to avoid her is to keep a bag of sand or beans close to the bed, so that the witch will stop to count how many beans or grains of sand are inside it.
You should Google image search panda fish. There's some pretty cool artwork. Unsure what their fascination is with counting small objects, though. What do you think you could leave out for pervy Uncle Pete the pedo to count?
So the reason for the beans and the sand is so that the witch stops to count it, that way you can get away while it's doing that because the witch is OCD.
Oh, she is? I wonder if she would have got there before you fell asleep, if she hadn't had to go back home and make sure she turned off the stove.
So, sleep paralysis is sometimes interpreted as space alien abduction in the United States.
Of course it is. Good grief. Maybe Jesus came down and sat on your chest.
Giggity.
I said sat, not shat.
Oh. So, The Nightmare is a 2015 documentary that discusses the causes of sleep paralysis as seen through extensive interviews with participants, and the experiences are reenacted by professional actors. It proposes that such cultural phenomena as alien abduction, the near-death experience, and shadow people can, in many cases, be attributed to sleep paralysis. I was still experiencing sleep paralysis myself when I saw this documentary. Up until this point, I thought I was all alone in this and losing my mind. A year after I watched it, the sleep paralysis stopped and I have never experienced it again.
I'm going to have to get some Rehypnol and dress up as a demon. But wait, people experience this in the night and think they had a near-death experience. Like young, healthy people's go-to reaction is, fuck me, I just nearly died in my sleep.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. It's that terrifying, Daniel.
Fair enough.
Some people only have isolated instances of sleep paralysis, and it only happens to them once, maybe twice in their life.
Much like actual death experiences, usually just once in their life.
Usually. And then there is the recurrent isolated sleep paralysis. This is what I had from the years of 2003 until 2015. I was fortunate that mine stopped. Some people can never get rid of it, and it persists throughout their whole life.
So, I'm really not trying to belittle this phenomenon at all, but it's essentially just a form of a nightmare, right? And unless you're a child, does anybody actually wake up post-nightmare and think the boogeyman is still going to get them? Since you have first-hand experience, explain exactly what your experience of it was, but crucially, also the immediate experience on waking afterwards. I'm interested.
So here is my first experience with sleep paralysis. I was living in Arizona in 2003. I'm 22 years old, and at the time I was in a house with several roommates. The house had a little camper parked in the yard. Sometimes when the house was full of people, I would go out to the camper to read or take a nap. One day, it was about 1 in the afternoon, I was in the camper lying on the little couch having a nap. I was lying on my right side, facing the interior of the camper. I woke up. I opened my eyes, and I remembered that I could feel an eye boogie in the corner of my left eye. So I reached my hand up to get it out. Or, I tried to reach. I couldn't move my arm at all.
Terrifying. Truly terrifying.
I tried to sit up. Nothing happened. I tried to move my legs. Nothing happened. I could feel my heart pound in my chest and my breathing became hard and labored. And then I felt someone else in the camper with me.
Pervy Uncle Pete.
Someone was watching me struggle to get up. I tried to move my head to see them, but of course, my head would not budge. I slowly began to gain control of my eyeballs, and I looked up and back and all around trying to see as much of the camper as I could see. There was nobody else there, but I felt it. And the fear, the overwhelming dread. At that point in my life, although I was only 22, I had placed myself in many situations that were indeed scary as fuck, but this was an entirely different feeling of fear. Slowly the fear started to fade, and as it did, the use of my body came back to me. I jumped up as soon as I could and bolted out of the little camper and ran into the house. I told one of the eldest roommates about what had just happened to me. I don't remember exactly what his reaction was, but I'm sure that he just chalked it up to all the partying we had been constantly doing.
So how sure are you that the paralysis came before the fear and the scary presence? Could it be that you were paralyzed with the fear itself?
That's a good question. And during the whole time I had sleep paralysis, like the entire how many years math, I don't know. It was always different. Like sometimes the fear would come first, sometimes the paralysis would come first.
Okay.
So yeah, this constantly happened to me for 12 years.
Math. Sorry.
I did it. Did the math. Sometimes every night for a week, sometimes once a week, or even just once a month, but it persisted. I was 34 when I realized that the sleep paralysis had finally quit, and sometimes I miss it. It was such a big part of my life for so long. Even though it was terrifying, I was just so damn used to it. Even though it scared the shit out of me, the dark presence had become a kind of friend to me.
Unlike Uncle Pete, he's a cunt.
Did you have an Uncle Pete that I should know about?
I did not.
Okay. Everyone's entity is different. Sometimes it's a demon, sometimes it's an old hag. An alien.
Or Beastman from He-Man. Just saying.
Beastman from He-Man. Mine didn't have a shape that I could discern. I feel like mine was something from another dimension. I know, it sounds crazy, but other people have felt the same way about their sleep paralysis entity as I do.
Sounds like sleepy time schizophrenia.
I didn't know you were a doctor.
I'm not. I said it sounds like.
Oh. Anyway. There is a documentary I found on YouTube called The Entity. Go check it out. It's only about 40 minutes long. It's very dramatic, but informative. There is a 32-year-old woman in the film who had been experiencing sleep paralysis since she was 5 years old. Her entity was a couple. She first saw them when she was 5 years old in her bedroom.
Oh no! Auntie Agnes was in on it with Uncle Pete.
Perhaps. But she asked her mother about them, and Mom had no clue and just thought her child had an overactive imagination. As she got older, the entities got more vivid and more violent, making her terrified to go to bed. She said that as soon as she becomes aware of the entities, she goes into paralysis and can't move or scream, and this is when they attack her.
So like I said, is it just the fear? Everybody has been paralyzed with fear in their dreams, right? Like, totally paralyzed, or that thing where you try to run away from something, but you can only run in slow motion?
Yeah, I've had the slow motion thing in my dreams before, but dreams are different than... Even nightmares are totally different than sleep paralysis.
Okay.
And I myself was never attacked by my entities. They just watched me and scared the crap out of me. I can't imagine being attacked or having that feeling of being violated by the unknown.
Or Uncle Pete and Auntie Agnes.
The woman's entities would choke her and sit on her chest, making it near impossible for her to breathe. She says that she felt so alone all of her life because every time she told someone about her sleep paralysis, they wouldn't understand. "It was just a dream. Get over it," they would say to her.
Only an arsehole would say anything like that.
And there's lots of those in the world, Dan. Lots of those.
What are you saying?
Nothing. But it is not just a dream, or even a nightmare, or a night terror. Sleep paralysis is a totally different animal. When you're alone in this, and your friends, family, and even doctors don't believe you, then you start to feel like you're losing your mind. I know I did until I found out that sleep paralysis happens to people all over the world.
If it's as common as you say, I think you said 4 in 10? It's sad that you didn't find anybody else who could empathize in all that time, but I guess after the first few tries and being ridiculed or belittled, you just gave up?
Yeah, I mostly kept it to myself for a really long time. Only a few people knew about it.
And did you actually go to any doctors?
Like I can afford healthcare in this country.
Oh, there it is. That's been a few episodes since you brought that up.
Okay, let's shake off that spooky shite and move on to lucid dreaming.
Shite. Yeah, this is where you get to kick Pete square in the dick and punch Agnes right in the tit.
Yeah, do it. A lucid dream is a type of dream in which the dreamer becomes aware that they are dreaming. During a lucid dream, the dreamer may gain some amount of control over the dream characters, narrative, or environment.
Or if you're doing it right, total, complete, entire godlike control.
Yeah, like flying and shit. Early references to the phenomenon are also found in Greek writing, ancient Greek writing even. For example, the philosopher Aristotle wrote,
"Often when one is asleep, there is something in consciousness which declares that what then presents itself is but to dream."
That what then? I really struggled with even just reading that sentence, so well done you for spitting it out.
It only took 2 takes.
And apparently Aristotle is an old lady.
In 1913, Dutch psychiatrist and writer Frederik van Eeden coined the term lucid dream in an article entitled A Study of Dreams.
I'm familiar with the term and the article, but I can't say I recall ever knowing the dude was a fellow Dutchie.
All the best people are Dutch.
True.
In 1968, Celia Green analyzed the main characteristics of such dreams, reviewing previously published literature on the subject and incorporating new data from participants of her own. She concluded that lucid dreams were a category of experience quite distinct from ordinary dreams and said they were associated with rapid eye movement sleep, or REM sleep.
I don't recall when this happened, but some undetermined amount of time ago, I signed up for a newsletter from a chap called Dr. Denholm Aspey, who offers lucid dream training and studies. I think he works over at Adelaide University in Australia to you, Autumn. One of his aims is to use it as a means of therapy and even rehearsal and training for like athletes and actors and such like, which is pretty cool and entirely on the other side of the spectrum from my main aim to totally defile numerous women.
You heard it here first, folks. Dan is a... Yep. God damn it.
Dan is a what? Are you going to call me a vile human being again?
I was trying to think of different words, but just vile. You're vile.
Defile.
Anyways, Celia Green was also the first to link lucid dreams to the phenomenon of false awakenings. A false awakening is a vivid and convincing dream about awakening from sleep while the dreamer in reality continues to sleep. After a false awakening, subjects often dream they are performing daily morning routines and shit such as showering, cooking, cleaning, eating, and using the bathroom. False awakenings, mainly those in which one dreams they have awoken from a sleep that featured dreams, take on aspects of a double dream or a dream within a dream.
Better check your spinning top. But yeah, I get those all the time. Like, they're the fucking worst, man. You think your creepy sleep paralysis presence sucked? Try having to wake up and start your day twice.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to just dream about doing mundane activities such as brushing my teeth and having a shit. So the first step to lucid dreaming is recognizing that you are dreaming. This recognition might occur in the prefrontal cortex, which is one of the few areas deactivated during REM sleep and where working memory occurs. Once this area is activated and the recognition of dreaming occurs, the dreamer must be cautious to let the dream continue, but be conscious enough to remember that it is a dream.
So this is where you can train yourself to lucid dream. There are many documented techniques, one of which is the most common and certainly the one that has worked for me. Pick a trigger object, anything you like. Think about it as you fall asleep, every night, without fail, very conscious of the fact that when you see it, you must realise that you are in a dream. We all dream about things we experience in our day, or thought of as we fell asleep. It's commonly regarded as a very important mechanism by which we process our experiences without going totally fucking batshit crazy. This happens during NREM sleep stage 2, in which the brain begins to produce bursts of rapid, rhythmic brainwave activity, which are known as sleep spindles, and are thought to be a feature of memory consolidation, when your brain gathers, processes, and filters new memories you acquired the previous day. Anywho, my point is that when you see the object in your dream, you realise you're dreaming, and boom, you can conjure yourself into a room with 1,000 kittens. Or hookers. You know, whatever floats your boat. Hookers.
What was that? Dream spindles? Sleep spindles!
Sleep spindles.
Kittens.
Spinning top.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He's like a live Heath Ledger.
I got nothing. Carry on.
It has been suggested that those who suffer from nightmares could benefit from the ability to be aware they are indeed dreaming. A pilot study performed in 2006 showed that lucid dreaming therapy treatment was successful in reducing nightmare frequency. This treatment consisted of exposure to the idea, mastery of the technique, and lucidity exercises. It was not clear what aspects of the treatment were responsible for the success of overcoming nightmares, though the treatment as a whole was said to be successful. And I am walking, talking proof that this works. Ever since I was a kid, I've had recurring nightmares. I won't bore you with the details, but I will give you an example of how becoming a lucid dreamer helped me control my nightmares. Or was it the nightmares that forced me to become a lucid dreamer? Anyways, here is just one of my experiences. I used to have nightmares about tornadoes coming after me. In some of them, I wouldn't be able to make it to shelter in time. In some of the nightmares, there was just not any shelter at all. When I began to lucid dream, I started to realize, while inside of the tornado nightmare, that I was not in fact in reality, but inside of a nightmare. So the tornadoes would just grow small and dissipate, or they would just fuck off and go bother some other town. As soon as I realized that I was in control, the fear no longer controlled me.
Your breathing between segments of sentences sounds like fucking tornadoes. Okay, so I have two questions. One, we met on Tornado Tuesday in Denton, and you still have me, so how sure are you that you ever woke up? Real life surely can't be this good.
If this is a dream, then I would be able to control it so that I don't have to clean toilets for the rest of my life. I can just do this.
Alrighty. And two, how exactly did you train yourself to lucid dream?
I don't know. I didn't really do it on purpose. It just started to happen. Like, I just started to realize I was in a dream and just control that shit, man. People that dream normally have no control over what they are seeing inside of their heads. The dreams play out as if they are watching a TV show. Lucid dreaming is more like playing a video game than watching TV. You can do anything within a lucid dream. You can even teleport yourself into a different dream or make yourself wake up altogether.
I don't know that I entirely agree with that. Perhaps there is a semi-lucid type of dream. I often have control and free will in my dreams, even though I don't realise that I'm in a dream, don't you?
No. Either I realise I'm in a dream, or I don't. This might seem crazy to those of you who can't even remember your dreams at all, but lucid dreaming is real. It's been scientifically proven. And it's okay if you can't or will never lucid dream. Only 20% of the global population can do it.
No, it's not okay. You're totally missing out. Just like circumcision.
What? So you're missing out on circumcision?
No, the circumcised are missing out on foreskins.
Oh, that makes more sense. Okay, back to being spooky. We are going to talk about night terrors.
Like when you dream you have an eye booger but you can't get it out. You know, the truly terrifying dreams.
What? Are you talking shit about my fucking experience of the thing?
It was your dream, man.
It wasn't a dream.
See, now you're laughing at it, thinking, yeah, that's not very scary.
Sleep paralysis is fucking terrifying, and it's not a dream.
Yeah, and those eye boogers can be persistent little bastards. They're right there, and you just want to get it, and you can't get it. Oh, God, it's just the worst.
I'm going to tie you up, and then in the morning, you'll have eye boogers, and you won't be able to fucking pick them out, and then we'll see who's laughing then.
The anger and the venom is real here. Holy shit, I touched a nerve. Not that you'd be able to touch a nerve, because, you know, sleep paralysis.
You're a mean person.
And vile.
Moving on. Night terrors are a sleep disorder causing feelings of panic or dread and typically occurring during the first hours of stage 3 to 4 non-rapid eye movement, or NREM sleep, lasting for 1 to 10 minutes. It can last longer, especially in children. Night terrors usually begin in childhood and usually decrease as age increases. Here is some shit that can cause sleep terrors in children. Sleep deprivation, medications, stress, fever, and other sleep disorders. The frequency and severity differ among individuals. The interval between episodes can be as long as weeks and as short as minutes or hours.
I would wake up from a night terror and immediately puke every single night until the age of about 8, and then occasionally thereafter for a couple of years. My parents were so lucky to have me.
Wow, like projectile vomit or just kind of roll over and puke on the floor?
In the bed, always in the bed. I can't speak as to the velocity of the puke. But always in the bed, yeah.
That's handy. Did you have that one of those like plastic sheets on your bed?
You would have to ask my parents, I'm really not sure.
Mummy, did he have a plastic sheet on his bed?
Why, yes, Autumn, he did.
Is that what your mum sounds? That's not what your mom sounds like.
It's close.
Close enough, okay.
Yeah, yeah. She's got a bit of a John Hurt thing kind of going on, you know?
She doesn't. The number of small children who experience night terrors is estimated at 36.9% at 18 months of age and at 19.7% at 30 months. The percentage slowly goes down the older the children become. In adults, the prevalence is lower at only 2.2%. I myself am included in that 2.2%. My brain is a wonderful place.
This is interesting. Like, what experience or exposure does an 18-month-old baby have to have night terrors about? Typically speaking, of course. I'm not talking about Unky Pete here. What has an 18-month-old seen or witnessed to dream about that is so horrifying, or terrifying, I should say? Or is it just a sensation, a feeling, without any stimulation of the visual cortex?
I don't know, because I don't remember shit from when I was 18 months old. I imagine it's just like, oh my god, I'm having nightmares about having no boobs in my face because I love to drink the milk from the titties.
Okay, and as an adult?
Same.
So, are your night terrors always visual? You can see scary things? Or is it sometimes just a sensation where there was nothing to see, you just felt scared as fuck?
Personally speaking, it's been both.
Okay, so that answers the question.
I answered the question, didn't
it? We got there in the end.
Night terrors have been known since ancient times, although it was impossible to differentiate them from nightmares until rapid eye movement was studied. Nightmares and night terrors are two separate things. A nightmare is simply a dream that causes fear or anxiety or stress. Nightmares are common. People experience them a lot. Nightmares occur during REM sleep. When you wake from a nightmare, you can typically tell someone else what the nightmare was about. Night terrors occur during non-REM sleep. When you wake from a night terror, you typically cannot remember what happened during the night terror at all. While you are having a night terror, you will usually be screaming and thrashing about in your sleep, sometimes with your eyes open, even. Nobody knows why night terrors happen, but scientists speculate that it could be the result of the same kinds of things that cause nightmares, such as stress, anxiety, trauma, and things like that.
Eye boogers.
Fuck you, man. And finally, we are going to talk about sleepwalking. Sleepwalking, also known as
somnambulism
or
noctambulism,
is a phenomenon of combined sleep and wakefulness. It is classified as a sleep disorder belonging to the parasomnia family. It occurs during slow wave stages of sleep in a state of low consciousness.
That would be NREM stage 3, before you enter everybody hurts sometimes sleep.
These activities can be as benign as talking, sitting up in bed, walking to the bathroom, consuming food, and cleaning, or as hazardous as cooking, driving a motor vehicle, violent gestures, and grabbing at hallucinated objects.
Or pissing in your girlfriend's closet. I've only sleepwalked once that I recall. I was still young and we had just moved to Holland. I walked downstairs where my parents were still watching TV. As I walked down the stairs, which were walled off on both sides, the walls had little windows in them with people hanging out on the other side. When I got to the hallway downstairs, it was full of people just hanging out and talking, like they were in a bar. I don't recall any of them interacting with me, though. I walked into the living room and asked my parents who all these people were. I don't recall if I was taken back to bed or if I just fucked off back upstairs on my own, leaving my parents sitting there very confused. Nor do I recall if the people were still in the hallway.
That's crazy.
Have you ever sleepwalked?
No, but my ex-husband did it quite a few times, and he would sleepwalk to the closet to pee in there.
Ha ha ha! Called it!
Yeah, it's funny now. Sleepwalkers probably are not acting out their dreams, though. Most sleepwalking occurs when your body is in non-REM.
I'm losing my religion.
I said non-REM.
Oh, sorry.
You are not dreaming during non-REM, but you could be having night terrors. You can safely wake up a sleepwalker. So long as you do it gently, nothing bad will happen to the sleepwalker. Myth debunking!
I've been lied to my entire life.
Indeed, sir. So, sleepwalking tends to run in families and usually happens to males more than females. A study out of Stanford found that 1 in 25 adults in the U.S. suffer from sleepwalking. Please go check out Selena Spooky Boo on TikTok. She is a sleepwalker and she has many videos of her doing the deed. She also has videos on YouTube if you are not into TikTok.
Yeah, you can check her out, but I know you love her. I just don't trust that it's real, man. I'm sorry.
Why would it be fake?
To get TikTok views and become quasi-famous?
I mean, I guess, but I mean, there's so many things to fake out there. Why would you fake sleepwalking?
I don't know. She's also just kind of annoying, but anywho, check her out.
I like her.
I don't.
And then there are people out there who just don't remember their dreams at all and sometimes claim that they don't even dream at all.
Everybody dreams, man. Period. Unless you're not capable of entering the proper stages of sleep to do so. But I'm pretty sure if that were the case, you wouldn't live long enough to annoy intelligent people by telling them that you don't dream. It's like that nonsense myth that you can't experience smell or taste in dreams. Have you heard that one?
Yeah.
That you can only smell or taste what might be in the air while you're sleeping. So, you know, your own farts or Uncle Pete's dick. But this is absolute nonsense. But then is it, actually, if you think about it? They say those senses are reactionary, right? So you can't taste what isn't there. I beg to differ. If I want to remember what a banana tastes like, I can. I can taste it right now. Am I special? Is this some kind of synesthesia? Can you?
I think you're just special, Daniel.
So if you think of a smell or a taste, you can't smell or taste it right now?
I can absolutely recall smells and tastes. I mean, I can't physically taste it, but I remember what it tastes like.
Which gives at least a very similar sensation to actually tasting it, right?
Yes.
I don't know. It's weird to me. I don't see why the brain wouldn't be able to manufacture smells and tastes, or remanufacture, I suppose, smells and tastes in your mind, in your dreams.
Everybody's brains are different.
They are. Answers on a postcard, though, folks. Let us know if any of you can smell and taste in dreams. Just comment on our videos on Facebook and stuff and things.
Yeah. Tell us how your electric meat works.
What the fuck?
Your brain, it's just a mass of electric meat.
Oh, okay, right, okay. Thought you meant like a vibrator.
Dreaming is related to having an active imagination, a wandering mind, or daydreaming. People who don't remember their dreams and claim to have not dreamt at all are basically people who don't have wandering minds and don't daydream at all. Their brains just don't have time to remember things that are non-essential.
Really? Where did you get this little tidbit of information?
From a scientist. There is a neurotransmitter and hormone called noradrenaline. It primes the body for action, and there are naturally lower levels of it when asleep. Those who are deficient in it may not recall their dreams or, arguably, not dream at all.
Oh, okay. I'm still calling bullshit on the not dreaming, as will virtually the entire scientific community. But I did look up noradrenaline, or norephedrine, and it's kind of interesting. As a hormone, it regulates numerous things, the likes of blood pressure. Apparently, levels of it spike immediately when we are rudely awoken by an alarm or Uncle Pete, making it harder to remember your dreams as well. I should also point out that today I learned that, unlike neurotransmitters, which are made from nerve cells in the brainstem, hormones are produced by your adrenal glands. That much I knew. But they are located where in your body, Autumn?
Your brain hole?
No, that's exactly what I thought. No, those would be the little hat-shaped things on top of your kidneys. I feel like I must have been taught this at some point, but it doesn't feel like I ever was. Perhaps I'm just noradrenaline deficient. I wouldn't say so, going by how well I remember every dream I have, though, to the point that I usually wake up tired because I feel like I've been conscious all night. Anywho, we synthesize the stuff and use it to treat several conditions, and a deficiency of it can cause the likes of ADHD. So, if a deficiency of it is known to cause people not to recall their dreams, I wonder if it's ever been administered to them to see if it helps.
Maybe it has, and we just haven't looked up that we don't know. We don't know. I don't know. Do you know? Are you a scientist?
Yeah, I did look it up, actually. I couldn't find an answer. Well, some food for thought there. Literally. Perhaps we'll revisit this sometime.
Perhaps. And that's it. That was episode 10. I feel sleepy. I'ma have a nap. Good night.
That'll be the Rehypnol kicking in. Good night.
You did not. Oh my god.
She'll be able to watch it, but she won't be able to move. It's the best.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, come support.
Come support us on Patreon at Seven Circles Pod. Your donations and support can help us elevate the quality of our podcast, and it would mean so much to us. This episode of Seven Circles was written by Autumn Vale and Dan Griffiths. Seven Circles is produced by Autumn Vale, with sound editing by Dan Griffiths too. Original music by Null Machine and art by Caroline Gates. Find us on social media, Facebook at Seven Circles Podcast, Insta at @7_circles_pod, and Twitter at @7circlespod. Now give me 5 minutes, I gotta go see to the missus. Oh yeah. What a lovely tea party.
Sleep spent.